is Stay Locked. Good boys, don't stroke. You don't need that dick anymore, do you?
Lock your dick away.
And you're listening to Chastity Pod.
Welcome back to Chastity Pod. I'm your host, Locked Fist Monster. I'm here, as always, with Nye Dumpling, my co-host. And we have a very special guest today. Dear listener, friend of the show, best in show at the San Francisco Horse Market, Max Encaged. So first off, welcome to the show. We're excited to have you on. Can you give us a quick introduction of yourself?
Hey, yeah. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm so excited to be here. Long time listener. So yeah, a little bit about me. My name, I go by Max Encaged. Obviously, that's not my legal name. That's a pseudonym I use. I'm in my early 40s. I'm based in San Francisco. I don't show my face online, but for those of you who can't tell, I am Asian. I'm Chinese American, but I was born here. And yeah, if you can't tell by my Twitter or my X, I guess is what we're supposed to call it now.
Nobody calls it X.
We're still calling it Twitter.
I know. I refuse. But yeah, I am a chastity sub pussy boy cum dump.
We love it.
And so how long have you been into chastity play, Maxon?
So I've really been more serious into chastity in the last 2 or so years.
Whoa.
I actually first discovered chastity like, 10 years ago or something, but I like kind of just dabbled in it. And the chastity technology back then was not good. You know, I think you've talked about it on previous episodes before, like how, you know, the chastity cages they were making 10, 5, even, you know, 5 years ago were just not super great for long-term wear for one reason or another. And really it's like Kink 3D that came around and just kind of revolutionized the game for a lot of us. So
yeah,
but really I kind of rediscovered chastity in the last 2 years, and it's just been amazing.
So you currently wear the Kink 3D, and now that you have a cage that we love and we know is super comfortable, I actually see that you're locked for very long periods. What's your usual lockups like, and what's your longest lockup you've had so far?
Yeah, it's a great question. When I first started with chastity play a couple of years ago, I was just locking up, you know, for a few hours a day, maybe a few days. And then I feel like I just kept on trying to push my boundaries little by little. Mm-hmm. I think I at one point did 2 weeks. And after doing 2 weeks, I was like, okay, I think I can go longer than this. And I did one of those like Twitter chastity challenges where it's like, oh, one like is 4 hours and a retweet's 12 hours. I can't remember what the times I put was. I actually had a spreadsheet where I kind of modeled out the various levels of engagement. And if I updated the hours or the days for like each type of engagement, it would like estimate how much out. So if anyone wants to do that, I can share that Google spreadsheet with you. Just reach out to me on Twitter. But my longest lockup was 236 days because my Twitter challenge got me 190 days. And after 190 days, you just like, you're not going to end after that. So I just kept on going. And I only ended up unlocking on that 236th day because I had to have a surgery in my groin the very next day. And then I couldn't stay locked. So that was sadly what ended that lockup. But now I got a Prince Albert piercing a couple of months ago in November of 2023, because I was really interested in engaging in pierced chastity. And so I gave myself a little bit of time to recover from that. Probably should have given myself more time, but I couldn't wait to get back into a cage, because that was honestly the worst part of the getting pierced. Not the, you know, obviously getting pierced, it hurts, but the worst part was just being unlocked for so long afterward. Because I love being locked. Mm-hmm. It's like a part of who I am. It's not even like something I do. It is like me now. And so I relocked on January 1st of this year, technically December 31st. I wanted to ring in the new year locked, actually. And my goal this year is to be locked all 366 days of the year, because it's a leap year this year. So
very hot. And so
110.
Have you been unlocked at all since December 31st?
I unlock about once a week for maybe 10 minutes, just for a deep you know, a thorough clean. And then I do have to unlock very briefly when I have my laser hair removal appointments. Obviously, they can't laser around the cage. So I unlock a little bit the day before to shave for like 5 minutes, and then I unlock for about an hour when I go in for my laser hair removal appointments. But other than that, I'm pretty much locked 24/7. I know some people go as far as to like track the minutes and hours, and you know, someone's like, I've been unlocked for 1 hour so far this year. I do not have that level of discipline, and I applaud those that do, but I just, you know, basically only unlock unless I absolutely have to.
Thumper from the Nine Thumper famously has that little app that he just uses to track his time out.
Yes.
And actually this year I've got a little spreadsheet I've got set up where I'm tracking how long I'm in various cages.
Nice.
So the current cage that you're in, it's the Badass Workroom resin cage, right?
Yes. If you follow me on my Twitter right now, I am wearing a resin test cage from Badass Workroom. Badass Workroom makes amazing stainless steel and titanium cages, as you know, where I know Locke this year in one right now.
I am.
Amazing. And I really want to get into one of those. But the nice thing about this test cage is that they will 3D print a resin test cage for, you know, about less than half the price, I think, of the titanium cage. So you can kind of test out different dimensions or different models. But the PA insert that it has, the Prince Albert insert that it comes with, is, of course, stainless steel, so that you can wear long term. And honestly, the resin test cage, when they sent it to me, I figured it would be like really, really rough, you know, test gauge. Like, it's not made for long-term wear, it says on the website, but it's actually really high quality. Like, I've purchased resin cages from other brands, not King 3D. And I would say that this one actually has a slightly smoother finish than a lot of those. It is not as nice as a King 3D cage. Those by far, you know, the quality and craftsmanship of King 3D is kind of, I think, unmatched. But for being a test cage, it's pretty good. So I've ordered one more test cage with slightly smaller dimensions. I think I can go a little bit smaller in the interior diameter and the cage length, just by a couple of millimeters. I'll push it a little bit. So I've got that test cage coming at some point, and then probably from there, I'll order a titanium Prince Albert cage from Badass Workroom.
And what gauge is your Prince Albert? And did you get the hollow urethral insert, or did you get the solid urethral insert?
Currently, I'm wearing a solid urethral insert because I am wearing a 6 gauge. Is it 6G?
Six gauge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to do the hollow, I think you have to have a 4 gauge, which is a 5 millimeter. So that's another thing that I'm waiting on. But eventually, I think I'd like to go for the hollow urethral insert.
So you're planning on gauging up your Prince Albert?
Yeah, I think a little bit. I think for me, you know, I think my diglet has limits. It's not that big, so I don't want to have this like humongous, you know, huge chunky piece of metal, but which I love seeing on other dicks though. But for mine, I think probably 4G is where I'd like to end up. But honestly, for those of you that are curious about how you pee with a PA insert, you know, it kind of just comes out. And even the one that I have right now, which is not hollow, the P stream is super straight. And honestly, one of the issues I had in my Kink 3D cage was getting your urethra exactly lined up in that little opening. And oftentimes, you know, you think you're lined up, but you're not. You end up spraying yourself with a PA insert. It holds it right in the middle. Like, I can pee standing up. I usually sit, but if I want to or if I need to, I can totally pee standing up. Or if I pee in the shower, it shoots a straight line.
Do you have any issues with the pee coming out of the PA hole, or does it just all come out the urethra for you?
Good question. For me, it does tend to dribble out a little bit. And so there are a few ways around that. Sometimes if I sort of pull my balls back while I'm peeing, if I'm standing, then it tends to flow down the tip of the cage versus down on my balls. Or if I'm sitting, I kind of just push it down so that few drops will dribble out the bottom, and it tends to dribble down the cage and not so much on my balls. So yeah, it definitely comes out a little bit of the bottom of the Prince Albert hole.
This is all really good information. A little bit of a fangirl moment. When I first saw a lot of PAs and stuff, I was very much interested, but I never really found like the motivation to get the PA myself. And then I actually saw through Lockfist how sexy the urethral spout looks in his cage. And I was like, this is something I actually kind of want to do. And then I saw it in your cage, the way that the urethral insert looks almost like it's fucking the lips of your pee hole. It's so insanely hot to me. So my master and I are actually thinking about, after we finish this Kickstarter season 3 lockup, that we're going to go get me my own piercing as well.
Ooh,
very exciting.
Do it. I mean, if anyone, yeah, I feel like I thought about getting a PA for a really, really long time, and I don't have any other body modifications. And so I've chickened out about getting a tattoo in the past, and I really thought I might chicken about getting a PA too. But I thought about it for so long, and finally I was like, you know what? I feel like when I think about things this long, like, I just have to do it.
Yeah.
And so I went in with a friend who held my hand the entire time. It definitely hurt a little bit, but honestly, it was so worth it. And the fact that I cannot pull my dicklet out of the back of the cage without, you know, it's so hot to me. Like, I never really did before, but just knowing that it is not even an option to cheat and pull out the back and jack off a little bit or anything, like, it is not coming out of that cage without the key.
You mentioned earlier you got back into the cage quicker than you usually would. How long did it take for you to heal before you were caged again post piercing?
Yeah, so I got pierced on November 11th 2023. And I put my first cage back on, I think it was just my Kink 3D cage, sometime in mid-December. It was like maybe 4 or 5 weeks, which was definitely too soon. But I was like, let me just try it and see what happens. And I only did it for like, I think, a few hours one day. And then I was like, okay, I'm definitely going to give it some more time. And whatever November 11th to December 31st is, that's how long I waited until like a long-term lockup. I think I might have done one overnight at some point between mid to late December, just to make sure it was going to be okay.
Like with an insert in it, locked up with a ring or something, sort of? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I had my barbell that I just kind of finagled through the Kink 3D holes, which I see a lot of people do. For me, that was really pinchy, though. I know that some have that experience and others don't. So I think it just really depends on your anatomy, what size cage you're in, what size your jewelry is and your piercing, etc. But, you know, if that's something you want to try, go for it. I was a little bummed that it was so pinchy for me, because I really do love my Kink 3D cage. I was using the N-Narrow cage, which they came out with, which was like the perfect size. And so I actually used my N-Narrow cage measurements to be the starting point for my Badass Workroom measurements, because I knew that that cage fit me really well. But yeah, but ultimately, I think I ended up waiting, what was that, like 7, maybe 8 weeks until I was locked back in my PA cage. Probably should have waited like another couple of weeks, or, you know, probably should have waited till like the 12-week period. But because I got pierced so late in 2023 and I really wanted to be locked for all of 2024, I kind of, you know, just went for it. But it's okay now. Now it's been a couple more months and everything's feeling really great.
I mean, I get the sense of urgency. I get it. I feel naked without my cage. It's a part of who I am. So
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So how did you get into chastity play in the first place?
Ooh, this is like, it's sort of a long story. So how much time do we have?
We have so much time. We have unlimited time.
Go everyone. Yeah. Everyone buckle up.
I also have rosemary and mint.
Perfect. Yes. Okay. Everyone go grab your popcorn. This is a good time to maybe pause the podcast, go grab a snack, sit down. You're going to get comfortable for this one. So I've been kinky for as long as I can remember, you know, right after I came out, right after high school. Like, I remember always being interested in a little bit of kink. And one of the mottos I live by is, I'll try anything twice. And ever since coming out, I tried a bunch of kinks in my 20s and 30s, and I felt like nothing really caught on. Like, I was always constantly searching for a different kink. Like, let me try this, let me try this, let me try this. I never went deep into any particular kink. And it was always when I was single. I've never been in a kinky relationship. All my long-term relationships were pretty vanilla and always monogamous. And like I mentioned, the first time I discovered chastity was about 10 years ago. It was in the early 2010s. I was single. I bought this cage called bird locked. It was like a silicone cage. It was super chunky, had a big external, you know, lock on the outside, like one of those little like keypad lock.
It had a little plastic wrap that you would wrap around through the like cage. Yes. I fucking hated that cage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hated it. But I still thought it was super hot. And I would put it on and be like, oh, this is so hot that I can't access my own dick. But I was really disappointed that I couldn't wear it for more than a few hours just because it was so huge and clunky. You couldn't wear it under any sort of clothes unless you were wearing like super baggy parachute pants or something. You couldn't do any normal activities with it. It was really difficult to clean. It was honestly just kind of painful and really chafy. So I bought that, but never really did anything with it. And then I met my partner and we were monogamous and had a, you know, fine, normal vanilla sex life for a long time, almost 9 years. And then we opened up in 2022. And once we opened up, I pretty quickly found myself exploring kink again. And I rediscovered chastity via Twitter porn and was just drawn right in. I started following some locked celebs like Caged Jock, and the fact that he was also Asian was also really amazing to me. Found Chastity Pod, obviously, quickly, voraciously consumed every one of the episodes that was currently out. I think it was only season one and maybe partway into season two by then or something.
Woohoo!
It was kind of a full circle moment now to be on this podcast, I gotta say. And then there was a dom I played with once in San Francisco, and I told him I was into chastity, and he, you know, put this cage on me while we played, and it was actually just a knockoff Cobra from Amazon. But even just wearing that, I was like, oh my God, this is so much better than this old device I had. And actually, after we played, he just let me keep the cage because he was like, yeah, it's, you know, from Amazon, it's so cheap. And so I wore that one on and off for a few months. And then eventually I ended up ordering and investing in an official Kink 3D cage because the craftsmanship and the, you know, just the finish of the cage, everything, and the fact they have so many sizes and so customizable, I ended up just buying an official one. And I wore that one for 2 weeks. That was kind of my first long-term, like overnight, multiple day lockup. And yeah, and then I basically started my Twitter, and that kind of started to take off. I remember thinking after posting, you know, some photos and videos of me getting fucked in chastity, getting my first like 1,000 followers. And I was like, wow, people actually want to see what I have to post. This is like wild to me because I've been on Twitter for years just watching other people's content. But starting to post content, that was kind of like a whole new adventure. So that was really fun. And then for a while, I had two doms. One I called my sir, one I called my daddy, and they were my key holders for a little bit, which was really helpful for me. I think it was good to have that structure early on in me trying to get more into chastity. And my sir gave me my first hands-free orgasm while locked, like just by fucking me and pounding my P-spot into oblivion. And the first hands-free orgasm I had while locked, that is the moment that my identity as a locked sub was cemented, because that orgasm,
you graduated. Yeah.
Yeah. That orgasm was literally the best orgasm I had had in, you know, 20 years of being sexually active.
Oh, wow.
And after that, I was like, well, this is like the only kind of orgasm I want to have now. Like there is no going back. And yeah. And then on Twitter, when I hit 3,000 followers, that's when I did that chastity challenge. And that's when I got my 190 day sentence, which ended up being 236 days. Mm-hmm. And that really pushed me to try the long-term chastity, because prior to that, my longest lockup was 2 weeks. So, you know, going from 2 weeks all of a sudden to 236 days was a big jump, but having a really comfortable cage, like by Kink 3D, and having my sir and my daddy as my two key holders, a lot of encouragement, a lot of motivation, and, you know, the community of all these locked guys online and Chastity Pod, all those things really helped me become, you know, who and what I am now. And now I feel like chastity isn't really a thing I do. It's just a part of who I am.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And being locked has actually unlocked other parts of my sexuality that I've long fantasized about, but never really had the courage to pursue. So chastity has been like my gateway kink, really.
We love it.
And that's kind of where we are now.
Yeah, for a lot of people, they find that trying on the cage actually changes something about them where they're very like in tune. It reveals something about themselves. And they find a lot of their identity through chastity, whether they're, you know, very happy as a submissive, very happy as a pup, very happy, you know, being in service to someone else.
Thumper actually had a really good metaphor for this, which was that being locked for him led to just sort of lowering the sea level that was covering up all of his other kinks. Like everything else just emerged from the surface by being locked for a long period of time. It just drained.
Heck yeah.
It drained all of the covering up stuff, was his metaphor.
So Maxon, tell me, what else outside of chastity have you learned about yourself that you really enjoy?
Yeah, so much. Chastity has completely revolutionized my sex life, basically. Like I said, I was unclear about a lot of kinks earlier on in my life, and I wasn't sure what purpose those kinks served for me, and I could never really find a way to like integrate it into relationships. I never had, you know, consistent DOMs, but discovering chastity and being locked for, you know, most of these last 2 years has helped me become so much more confident in my sexual desires and helped me let go of so many insecurities I had, mainly around my dick, honestly, because I have a pretty average cock. It's like, you know, 5.5, 6 inches, whatever, but it was never really anything special. And I think I kind of secretly harbored a lot of like shame and insecurity around my front.
Aww.
And so I know it's kind of like weird, but it's true. And whenever I bottomed, I would also kind of, you know, jack off or play with my dick, which ultimately what I've come to learn was a huge distraction and kind of holding me back from my full potential, because being locked has helped me rewire myself psychologically and physiologically. And it's really helped me let go of a lot of shame and insecurity about my dick, because now, like, my locked dick is the source of my power. And now my pussy is my sole sex organ. And letting men use it for their pleasure is its sole purpose. And I get off on other men using me to get off. And it's being locked has given me so much clarity around who I am and what I want. And it's kind of given me a more solid sense of myself and my sexuality. And because of being locked for so long and not being able to jack off and release that pressure, I mentioned, you know, chastity has kind of been my gateway kink, because that chastity ultimately is what got me into wanting to stretch my pussy with toys, because my pussy would just get so hungry. And I remember, you know, buying my first quote unquote big toy, which is now my starter warm-up toy. And, you know, also so much inspiration on Twitter by watching all these guys take huge, ginormous things up their butts. And so I started buying bigger toys and bigger toys, and eventually took my first fist about a year ago.
Congratulations.
Amazing.
And with that also, thank you. Thank you. I never thought I would be discovering new things, you know, in my 40s, but here we are. And then also just being able to take bigger things, I started wanting to take more things. And that's kind of what also got me into cum dumping, because like one cock and one load or one toy just wasn't enough. I just wanted a second, a third. So yeah, chastity has kind of gotten me into my two other kinks that are kind of big for me right now, which are fisting and cum dumping.
We love it. What triggered the move from being monogamous with your partner of 8-9 years to now being open?
That's a great question. So my husband and I had a discussion about having an open relationship very early on in our relationship, probably about a year or two in. And at the time, we determined it wasn't right for us. Neither of us had been in a successful open relationship before, and I honestly thought I would have some jealousy issues. And so we kind of put that issue to bed, and we didn't talk about it for a long time. And then it was in early 2022, when we were watching a TV show that had someone in a polyamorous relationship. And my husband turned to me at one point and said, "Hey, have you ever thought about that conversation we had a long time ago about an open relationship?" And I kind of just turned to him and said, "Actually, I have been thinking about it." And that moment kind of just sparked this journey for us, where that evening we had a pretty in-depth discussion. And then we really wanted to do things the right way. We'd been together for so long, we didn't want to just kind of throw this into chance and wade into new waters unintentionally. So we did some research. We read this book called Opening Up by Tristan Taormino. We booked some sessions with a queer sex positive couples counselor who also, having that mediator was really helpful for us. We drafted an open relationship agreement with very specific rules on what was and what was not allowed and kind of some shared values we had around why we wanted to open up our relationship. Mm-hmm. And then we started it. We went very slowly and gradually at first. It wasn't like, all right, we're jumping into group sex our first week. It was like, let's each get erotic massages the first week, and then we'll come back and talk about it. How did that feel? You know, okay, now we're going to try oral stuff the next time. Come back. How did that feel? Okay, now let's do, you know, everything. And we also, of course, made sure we got tested, made sure we got on prep, all that kind of stuff. So it was gradual for us, but we wanted to make sure we just did it with a lot of intention. And really for us, what it's about is each of us wanting each other to have the most amount of fulfillment in our lives. It was like, what's holding us back from that maximum level of enjoyment and fulfillment? And honestly, you know, trying to place all of your needs and desires and wants on one person and the pressure for that one person to have to fulfill all of those needs and wants and desires is kind of ridiculous, right? And so it was like, well, you're either going to stay monogamous and have some things that go unfulfilled, or if you think about, you know, having an ethical non-monogamous relationship, you know, what's holding you back from having more fulfillment and more happiness in each other's lives? And so that's really what our open relationship is about.
Have you guys heard of the book Ethical Slut?
I've heard of it. I actually have not read it yet.
Okay. It's a really incredible book. I've read it, and it's basically about how to navigate non-monogamy. Ethical Slut talks about how to manage like major feelings that you have in regards to wanting to seek different experiences with other people. They address major things like insecurity, jealousy, and things that are like after you get over the hurdle of, you know, these conversations and you actually start having different partners, how to do time management amongst different partners. Really powerful tool, really highly recommend Ethical Slut for all of our listeners and yourself if you guys are still having any hiccups in the lane.
Yeah, I'll definitely add that to the list. What am I trying to say? It's never too late to learn.
You can always keep learning.
Yeah, exactly.
You mentioned earlier that chastity really unlocked that part of you that really enjoys servicing men. And one of the most sexy and exciting things about you and your online persona is that you're a cum dump. You live on serving so many other men. Can you tell me a little bit more about how chastity has, you know, I guess, led you to becoming this cum dump extraordinaire?
Well, I've always thought getting bread was hot, and I certainly have a breeding fetish. I remember some of like the oldest porn I used to watch, you know, back in the day, like during college years, was this video called Dawson's 50 Load Weekend.
Oh, legendary.
Yes, it's legend. You know, where a bunch of tops are basically just using this bottom. And I can't tell you how many times in my, you know, earlier days that I jerked off to that video. And nowadays, I think I get so much more inspiration from, you know, a bunch of Twitter cum dumps like Corey Hudson and Brock Tyler and Ali Adamos and so many other guys on Twitter. But, you know, I was a child of the 80s. HIV and AIDS were terrifying and I think instilled a lot of fear and shame about sex into, you know, my generation. And I used condoms all the time for hookups after I came out, unless I was in a monogamous long-term relationship. But I remember having so much anxiety about, you know, getting HIV and STDs that I would actually check the condoms after sex to make sure they were still intact because it was just a different time back then. And I also didn't know a lot of folks that were pause as I was coming out. And it wasn't until I moved to San Francisco and really educated myself on HIV and AIDS and made a lot of friends who were pause that I realized that HIV isn't anything to be terrified about. Like, yes, we should do all we can to prevent transmission of HIV, but what's even more dangerous about it is the shame and the stigma around the disease. And so then fast forward to like the early 2010s, there were advancements in science and sexual health, namely PrEP came out around then, and I was actually in two PrEP studies earlier on in the days. And that really allowed me to let go of the fear of sex, which I'd been harboring ever since becoming sexually active. And nowadays, the new thing is DoxyPrep, which is another thing that is like helping reduce the fear around, you know, STIs, namely like, you know, gonorrhea, chlamydia, and syphilis. So, you know, kind of getting rid of the fear because of the advancements in science was a big milestone. And then I was listening to podcasts like Chastity Pod, and another really great podcast I love is Such Fun, which is a fisting podcast. These two things have really helped me process and get over the shame I felt about the kind of sex that turned me on. And then chastity was really the gateway kink that drove me to want to become a locked pussy boy cum dump, because I was locked all the time and horny all the time and not able to jack off and, you know, get off on my own. So I'm just going to help a bunch of other guys get off. So between like, you know, chastity driving me to want to become a cum dump, and the science and some good podcasts and a lot of online inspiration are what allowed me to become a cum dump. With science and the resources, but without chastity, I'd probably be able to take loads all day, but I'm not sure I'd always want to. And with chastity, but no science and the resources, I would probably want to take loads all day, but wouldn't know a safe and healthy way to do it. So it's really like a combination of all of these things that have allowed me to really explore, you know, this longtime fantasy, right? Like Dawson's 50 load weekend used to be so hot to me, and I had my first 50 load cum dump. It's like Maxon's 50 load evening earlier this year. And so that's been, you know, kind of amazing to like live out your fantasies. You know, for everyone that has these like sexual fantasies, I'm like, well, what's holding you back? You know, like go find a way to actually pursue it. You only live once, right? But that said, you know, cum dumping is really fun, but also sexual health and being a responsible slut are super important to me personally. And so I'm going to play hard, but for me, I also want to be able to do that in a responsible way.
How was the 50 load cum dump evening? Like, was it everything you wanted to be? Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. Oh my God. It was so much fun. Cum dumping is like a marathon. I don't know if you've run a marathon before or like cycled, you know, a century, like 100 miles or something, but you know, it's about the training. There's like a physical training aspect to it, right? Like you just need to train your whole and really your entire body. It's a lot of stress on your hips and your back, your pussy and your crack, but it's all those things. It's like, There's a physical toll for sure. There's also a mental side of it. Like you have to prepare yourself mentally for, you know, getting used for that long. And at some point your mind kind of just takes over a little bit. And I think similar to like running a marathon, you know, you start off, you take a few loads, you run a few miles, you're getting warmed up. You're like, okay, I'm feeling good. Let's keep going. I've prepared for this. And then you do a little bit more, and then you're like, okay, I'm starting to get tired, but I can keep going. And at a certain point, at least for me, I don't know how it is with every cum dump, there's a certain point where I'm like, I'm really fucking tired. Like physically, I am exhausted, but mentally, I want to keep going. And so then that you kind of get into this like mental zone where you push yourself further than where you think you can go. And that is a really interesting place for me. I tend to probably push myself maybe farther than I should. I don't know, but I've always been okay in the end. And then, you know, I usually wrap up around like 3 or 4 hours. I don't know how some guys go for like 8 hours. That to me sounds crazy. Like after 3 or 4 hours, I am spent. My body is achy. My hole feels raw. My skin is usually, you know, kind of chafed because some tops just have really rough pubic hair. And it's like when they're fucking you, I'm like, oh my God, it feels like steel wool on my taint. But, you know, by the end, I'm satisfied. And I love letting so many guys use my pussy to get off in and taking their loads. And I love that usually the next morning, there's still loads coming out of me. It's really hot. Yeah, it's like right at the end of every cum dump, I'm always like, oh, I'm so exhausted. I'm never doing this again. Why do I do this? And then the next day I'm like, when am I going to do this again? I want to do this again. Let's do it tonight, tomorrow night, next week. When are we doing this? Let's go.
So do you remember your first come dump experience, and how did you feel before and after that? And before you answer that, we're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor. Deny Dumpling, you're a permalock sub. What cage are you locked in right now?
I'm wearing the pink Kink 3D Cobra N with a size 1 curved ring. It's incredibly comfortable and currently my favorite cage. How about you, Lockfist?
I have the black Kink 3D Cobra S extra wide because I'm extra thick with a size 2 and size 3 curved rings. It's also my favorite non-metal cage.
Getting the fit right can be pretty annoying for chastity play. So part of what makes Kink 3D so great is their interchangeable parts. Any size cage fits on any base ring, so you can make adjustments as your chastity journey evolves.
That's right. Also, they provide live fittings at stores like Mr. S Leather in San Francisco,
Leatherman in New York City,
and at various kink events all around the world, like Claw in Cleveland,
International Mr. Leather in Chicago,
Kink Down South in Atlanta,
Dory Alley and Folsom Street Fair, and so much more.
So if you're curious about chastity and are going to be in one of those cities or at one of those events, you can get fitted for a cage.
And you can listen to our season 1 episode, The Right Cage Is Out There, on how to measure yourself for a cage before getting your own.
These cages are extremely well made, they're comfortable, durable, and easy to clean. Definitely my first choice for anyone getting into chastity.
You can buy these cages on kink3d.com.
There's also a subreddit, our Kink3D Exchange, where people sell or exchange their gently used cages and rings.
So what are you waiting for? Get locked today with Kink3D.
And we're back. Maxon, can you tell us about your first experience as a cum dump? How did you feel before? How did you feel after? What was the prep work? Spill the beans.
Yeah, my first experience as a cum dump was actually in Chicago. And I'd, you know, been watching a lot of cum dump porn online, like I mentioned, you know, Corey Hudson, Brock Tyler, and those guys. And I did reach out to a few cum dumps, you know, just asking about, you know, their tips and things like that. And there's a couple of, you know, cum dump resources out there. If you really search on Twitter or on Google, I think you can find them. But yeah, I started to put down some ground rules around, you know, how I wanted my cum dump to go. And for me at that time, I didn't really know anyone, that many people in Chicago. So I hosted my own cum dump on my, you know, just by myself in a hotel room in Boys Town. And I set up an event on Sniffies, invited a ton of guys. You know, I maxed out the event. Back then, the event cap was 50 on Sniffies. They've since upped it to 75. And I remember getting 50 RSVPs or, you know, 50 tops saying they were going to come. And I was so freaking nervous because it was like the first time I'd ever done a cum dump. I was terrified about, you know, getting all my things stolen, or, you know, what if something could happen to me and no one's around? It was, you know, I was a little nervous. At the same time, I also wanted to be a gracious host. I bought snacks, I bought drinks, I put them in the mini fridge, I wrote a little sign. I have a photo of it. I could post it to Twitter. Oh, it would be pretty hilarious. But it was like, I had like gummy bears and chocolate and vitamin water for tops.
And so courteous.
Of the 50, like 13 guys dropped by, because I did not know that on Sniffies, tops can be flaky. But that's okay. I think I got, it was like 13 or 17 loads that, I think it was 13 loads, which is also, you know, the most loads I'd ever taken in one evening before. And I remember my body being kind of tired after that one session, which was, I think, 3 hours.
Oh, wow.
And now I feel like 13 loads is like a warm up. But that's kind of like, you know, like I said, like when you're training for a marathon, you know, you first run your half marathon and like that seems like a lot. And then after you're able to run half marathons, then you do your full marathon. So yeah, I was extremely nervous, but excited before and feeling extremely tired, but satisfied after. And that's kind of how I feel before every cum dump. Even nowadays, I get a little like antsy and jittery right before when I actually have to like sit down and take some deep breaths and like meditate for a few minutes before every cum dump, because I'm just kind of preparing myself mentally for, you know, the pummeling my pussy is about to receive.
So tell me a little bit more about the appeal of being a cum dump. I really want to know, like, what makes it so freaking hot to you? Is it physical? Is it psychological? Because you're saying that it's taxing.
It's taxing, but it's amazing. You know, like I said, I definitely have a breeding fetish. Like the moment when I can feel a top cum in me, I just get this like rush of endorphins and serotonin. I think, you know, it's just that like, oh, it's happening. Oh, it's so hot. So I think there's that part of it. Like the act of getting bread is hot, whether it's one load or your second load or your 10th load or whatever it is. Like that moment is always hot. Also for me, I think cum really does make the best lube. And so, you know, whenever I'm getting fucked by one guy and it's the first load and we're using lube, I'm like, okay, this is feeling good. But once he comes in me, I'm like, okay, I want another dick, because that second dick is going to feel twice as good using that first guy's load as lube. And so, and that compounds, like the third dick feels better than the second one. The fourth dick feels better than the third. And by the time you've got 10-ish loads in you, that's when my pussy really starts to open up and get really gushy. And when someone's fucking me, I feel their dick like pushing all the other loads around in me, and it gets a little noisy, or they start fucking some loads out of me, and then that's when it really gets hot. I would say the teens, like the loads in the teens in the 20s are for me like the sweet spot. After about 25, that's when I'm like, okay, I'm getting tired, but I'm going to keep going. I want to keep going. And then after that, it's just like, well, let's just see how far I can go. Fuck. But that's for me. Like some guys, you know, like Corey will get like 60 loads in Houston or whatever it is. And I'm just like, oh my God, I can't imagine. Because even getting to 50 that time in San Francisco, I was like ready to tap out in my mid-40s. And then a multi-comer top friend showed up. And I was like, you're getting me to 50. So between him and the host, Master K, they really pull out all the stops for me. And I think they ended up giving me my last like 3 or 4 loads to get me to 50.
What would you say is your most memorable cum dump experience?
Most memorable cum dump experience, like one particular moment of a cum dump, or the most memorable cum dump overall?
Like, you know, like the most incredible night that you did or weekend that you did where you were a cum dump.
I want both. I want to hear both.
Yeah, both. Okay, no los dos.
Okay. I would say one of the hottest experiences I've had at a cum dump was a top friend in San Francisco was hosting me at his apartment in the Castro. We set up a time on a Friday from noon to 2. And I kind of thought, oh, it's going to be like a hot lunchtime breeding. All the guys working from home on a Friday are just going to like swing by the Castro, you know, swing by my friend's apartment in the Castro, drop off their loads, and then go back to their afternoon meetings. And that's what happened. In 2 hours, we had 28 loads. It comes out to like, I think, 4.5 minutes per load. Tops were not there to play. They were there to breed, and it was so hot. So actually, that was maybe one of my best cummed up experiences overall, because we were in and out. I think I had like a work meeting at 2:30. So I was like, you guys, I need to end at 2. I gotta go home. I gotta be back at my laptop by 2:30.
Oh my God.
But then actually that one of the hottest moments also happened during that same cum dump, because at one point there were like 6 or 7 guys. They all showed up at like the same time. They were all jacking off, you know, getting hard, watching me get pummeled. And this one guy shows up with, we're friends now, but he has a 9 by 7.5 inch beast of a cock. And it is rock hard. Like some guys who are super hung, you know, don't get rock hard, but he has, I guess, a really strong heart and it pumps that blood. And oh my God. So like he was fucking me and, you know, just ruining my hole in the best way possible. And then right after him, or was it right before him? I need to remember. Show Off Jonah shows up. And if you don't know Show Off Jonah, if you don't follow Show Off Jonah on Twitter, you
love all him.
He's super adorable and super cute and sweet. He'd sent me a message, you know, the day before saying like, hey, I'm in town, I might show up. And I was like, you know, fangirling basically. And it was an honor to get his load because he's just so sexy. And he actually had four loads in him while he was breeding me. Oh. So that was even hotter. Like, oh, cum dumps breeding cum dumps is
in load, you know, suction.
Yes, exactly. So that was a really fun cum dump because it was like super hot and, you know, 2 hours, like tops just showed up and did what they do best.
So what's your biggest current record? Is it the 50 load cum dump? And what are your goals for yourself, if you have any?
My biggest record is the 50 that I got in San Francisco in that one evening earlier this year. And honestly, after that, I feel like I'm good. Like, I'm going to continue cum dumping, but I don't think I'm going to like ever aim for like 60 or 70. Like 50 was a milestone for me. And my body was ruined by the end. I was so tired. I just wanted to eat. And yeah, so I don't really know what my next cum dumping goal will be. If anything, I want to take more fists this year. I'm still going to continue cum dumping because honestly, I think being able to take a fist really helps you with being a cum dump because your hole is used to, you know, big things. It just helps train your hole. You can go longer, you can go harder. And then, you know, even a 9 by 7.5 inch dick can show up and pound you and you're like, well, this still isn't as big as the biggest fist I've taken, so I can still keep going. Whereas a lot of guys might take a 9 by 7.5 and be like, oof, I'm done, and they tap out.
Yeah.
We heard you were best in show at the San Francisco Horse Market. Tell us all about that. How was that?
Oh my gosh, you guys, that was maybe one of the hottest nights I've ever had in my entire life. If you haven't done Horse Market, y'all need to go. Stallions or mares, like tops or bottoms, you should go to Horse Market. It is such an amazing event.
I've done it before.
I went as a mare. Yeah, I went as a mare in San Francisco last year and just had the time of my life. I was so nervous. You know, I had a good clean out. I actually got bred by two friends to kind of warm me up. And then I went to Horse Market. So I was a little bit warmed up or pre-lubed, which for me is a good thing. And yeah, the thing with Horse Market, if you don't know, you can, you know, Google it, but stallions show up later, mares show up first, and the mares are hooded. You either wear a red hood or a white hood. Red hood means you're, you know, cool with bareback. White hood means wear condoms. And in this room, I think there were about 20 mares. There were a couple of guys from Twitter that I knew as well. So I was like kind of also fangirling that some other Twitter guys were there. And yeah, then, you know, got hooded and got ass up on a mattress. And then the stallions start showing up and, you know, the rush of excitement of like not seeing anyone who's fucking you or really anything, even, you're just hooded, it's dark for you, so all everything you're feeling is kind of heightened. It's kind of like, you know, you close your eyes to hear music better, right? Or to taste something better. And by being hooded, everything else is just heightened, and it's just super hot to know that a ton of guys around you are also getting fucked and that you're getting fucked by all these guys. I started counting the number of times I got mounted in that one evening. Like every time a top like pulled out and another top, you know, mounted me, I would count that. And I lost track after 50. They weren't coming all the time, of course. And actually, Horse Market is not about loads because a lot of tops, you know, can only come once, maybe twice. And so for the tops, it's really about being able to try out a bunch of different holes. And I've talked to stallions and they said, you know, it's amazing to try different holes to really see, you know, how this one feels versus that one. And that's, you know, part of the appeal about being a top or a stallion at the Horse Market event. But as a bottom, it's about, you know, just being a hole or holes for guys to use. And they'll move you around every now and then if you get tired or if you want to get moved. There's usually a couple of slings and some sex furniture. But yeah, so I got moved around. I got like pounded out in a sling for a while, and I got moved over to a sex bench, and then got put back on the mattress and got DP'd for a while by this guy with like a horse dick and some other guy. It was one of the hottest experiences I've ever had. I think I ended that night with like 9 or 10 loads in me, and I was one of the last bottoms standing by the end, but it was just so much fun. I can't wait to go again. Sadly, every time it's back in San Francisco, I'm either out of town or I have other commitments that day and I can't make it work. So one of these days I want to go back.
Well, they've got horse markets in a bunch of different cities, you know, so.
Yes.
And, you know, off-brand horse markets too. Like the one I went to in London in March 2022, it was a horse fair party, but I don't think it was marketed by the same people who do the San Francisco horse market. So you mentioned that being blindfolded really heightened being hooded really heightened the sensation. Did you start incorporating blindfolds into your own cum dumps? Do you do cum dumps blindfolded, or do you prefer to be able to see who's fucking you?
I've done both. So when I first started doing cum dumps, I was not blindfolded because I was by myself in the room and I just wanted to be more aware of my surroundings, you know, for safety. And I wanted to see if someone was stealing my stuff or if they were, you know, doing something that I didn't want them to do, you know? So the first couple of cum dumps, I was not blindfolded. But once I started meeting tops that like to host cum dumps, and for those tops out there that like to host cum dumps and that are good at it, like if they're actually attentive and, you know, they listen to the cum dump and they're telling the tops what the rules are, some of them are even so thoughtful as to, you know, bring the wet wipes and bring some Red Bull or vitamin water or gummy bears. Those guys, I'm like, oh my gosh, you are God's gift to cum dumps. but once I started meeting some hosts, then I started doing blindfolded cum dumps. Cause then, yeah, you're really just there to be holes and to get used. And for me, I do no loads refused cum dumps. I know some cum dumps do some loads refused. I think as long as, you know, you're playing by the rules, you're not on drugs or substances, because that's one of my rules for me, then yeah, come one, come all.
So you mentioned there's actually people who have helped you set up your cum dump experiences, right? Like someone else finds out the space, perhaps the people who come in who are going to, you know, dump the load into you. Tell us a little bit more about that process.
Yes, cum dump hosts are amazing. I love them. If you're a cum dump host, send me a message on Twitter because I want to know some more. But yeah, so, you know, as a cum dump, there is a lot to manage if you're doing it by yourself. You know, you're either supplying your own space if it's at a place where you live, or you're booking a hotel room. You get to the room, now you got to set up the room, you know, make sure the lighting situations are right. You're bringing some supplies yourself. You are starting the event on Sniffies. You are reaching out to all those guys on Sniffies and answering questions and, you know, sending pictures and all these things. It's a lot. And then once your cum dump starts, you're pretty busy.
Right? You can't be on the phone.
You
no.
You don't have time to get back on Grindr and invite more guys over. I mean, I guess you could, but I feel like I want to just pay attention to what's happening. So it's tough. Like if you're doing a cum dump yourself, you know, it's a little bit limiting. Whereas if you have a host, some hosts will even create the Sniffies event, like they want to control the Sniffies event and they'll invite guys, which I think is also really hot as a bottom because it's like, well, I don't even know who's coming. All I know is that, you know, this top friend of mine has invited 50 or 75 of his top buddies over on Sniffies and they're all going to come and breed me and use my holes. Usually I think the bottoms book the space or pay for the space if it's a motel or hotel room. And I like to bring my own snacks because sometimes I feel like peach gummies and sometimes I feel like regular gummy bears. And sometimes I want, you know, vitamin water versus Red Bull or things like that. But
you're so adorable. Yeah,
you know, we got to have our snacks. But oftentimes, sometimes I'm like too busy during a cum dump that I don't have time to like say, oh, wait, I just need to grab a handful of gummies. It's like I'm just taking the next dick after the next one. But a good cum dump master will say, hey, time to take a break. And he'll bring over your vitamin water, which is really sweet. So, you know, it's important to keep the cum dump well hydrated.
Do you ever arrange cum dumps for other bottoms? It sounds like you could easily organize one if you wanted to, or if there was like a bottom who's like, could. I desperately want to have a cum dump. Can you, oh shining saint of cum dumps, could you help set one up for me?
You know, I could. I have thought about it. I would be so tempted though to just get ass up next to them. And at that point, if you're having two guys ass up, you should just find another cum dump master. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, maybe what I should do as a helpful resource is maybe just create, you know, how to run a cum dump 101 course and like put it out there, because I do think there are a lot of tips and tricks and advice on how to run a smooth and efficient and effective cum dump, just from an events perspective, you know, from finding the space and the time and, you know, how you're inviting tops and what information you're sharing and what you're bringing to the room and what you're doing to prepare for that. The other side of that, though, is really the tops, like the tops who are visiting cum dumps. If you're a top and if you haven't been to a cum dump before, like really educate yourself on what to expect and how to be a good top at a cum dump. Cum dumps are about taking loads. So, you know, if you're a top that's super into condoms, cum dumps might not be for you. Or if you're a top that takes, you know, 30 to 45 minutes of hardcore jackhammering a pussy to come, cum dumps might not be for you. Or if you're a top that doesn't like really wet, sloppy, cum-filled pussy, if you're like, oh, I prefer fresh, cum dumps might not be for you. So there's a bunch of things out there that, you know, might turn tops away from cum dumps, and that's okay. Cum dumps aren't for everyone. Cum dumps are for, you know, nasty, filthy, pervy breeder tops who want to dump their loads in some juicy, wet pussy in probably 5 minutes or less and go about their way.
God,
and go to dinner, go see a show.
What ass pussy was written about cum dumps? I cannot believe this.
You need to write that guide. You need to write that guide both for bottoms and for tops, how to organize a cum dump, what tops should be expecting at a cum dump. You should put together the Bible on this.
All right.
And then Locked Fist and I will do an audiobook version of it. So anyone who wants to listen to it,
I love it.
We'll do it. We'll do it. Write the tops, write the bottoms. It. We'll do it.
Okay. Cum dump Bible coming to you on Audible.
Fantastic. This is a tangent, but what I want to ask anyways, did you see at Ayala Girls on Twitter recent blog post about her birthday gangbang? This is out in the straight world.
No,
so
I
like
haven't.
I was reading it on the flight to New York, and the thought coming out of my head was the straights are not okay.
Oh no.
This is a girl who set up, you know, set up had her and like a group of her friends set up a gangbang for her birthday. And, you know, good for her.
Yeah.
But then reading through like how they organized it and the rules they set up and everything, I was like, this reads like a nightmare. Like, I would have hated to be at this party. Like, the straights are just not okay.
I'll send her my cum dump Bible.
Yeah. Well, so she insisted on condoms for everyone, among other things. So, like, it was, there were multiple reasons why it did not work out well. But
this
leads into the next question. So deny dumping, I'm just stealing it from you. We know sexual health is important to you. As a cum dump, what steps do you take to be a responsible slut?
Condoms.
Yes.
No.
You
no
always
condoms,
and
sorry.
Everywhere insist on condoms.
Oh man. So if y'all follow me on Twitter, you know that sexual health is a thing for me. Like, I've done a couple of posts that have actually gotten a lot of traction that I appreciate about, you know, STIs and sexual shame and stigma and testing and DoxyPep and all that kind of stuff. So for me, you know, I love taking raw loads up my pussy, but at the same time, you know, with that comes a certain amount of risk, and I want to mitigate that risk because I care about my body and my health, and I care about my community health. I think my worst nightmare is that I would unknowingly expose, you know, 50 guys who came to my cum dump to something that I had. I get tested very regularly, every 4 to 6 weeks. And especially if I'm about to have a cum dump, I want to know that I am not exposing all these guys to something that I already have. And then I'm also getting tested pretty soon after a cum dump, usually about a week maybe 2 weeks later, just depending on timing, because I want to make sure that anything I have that I'm not, you know, taking it to the next one or spreading it around. So I like to have fun, but with that, there are responsibilities. And I think each of us as an individual have our own part to play in the health of our community. So I definitely encourage everyone to get tested thoroughly and often, and especially if you're a huge slut like me and you like to, you know, take a bunch of loads, or if you like to give a bunch of loads, you know, you should also be getting tested. So for me personally, I'm getting tested every 4 to 6 weeks. Usually I am on PrEP. I take the daily pill. There is also injectable PrEP now, which is an option for those people who, you know, either don't like taking a pill every day, or if you just don't have that habit of taking a pill every day and it's, you know, something you forget, definitely look into injectable PrEP. I was in that study too, and it's efficacious. It works. So I'm on PrEP. I am also on DoxyPep, which is, you know, doxycycline that you can take ideally within 24 hours after a sexual encounter. And it greatly reduces the risk of transmission for bacterial STIs like chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis. I will say, though, DoxyPep is not 100% effective against those things. It definitely helps reduce the risk, but it does not completely, it's not a foolproof barrier. I have gotten gonorrhea twice while on DoxyPep, and gonorrhea is the one that it is least effective against. It's only about 50% effective against preventing gonorrhea transmission. So I've gotten that one twice in the last year and a half on DoxyPep. But now there's actually this really amazing study is studying the effects of meningococcal B vaccine on reducing transmission of gonorrhea as well. So
An
interesting study that I'm also getting into, basically just donating my body to science.
We appreciate your sacrifice. But
that's a really, yes, of course. That's a really interesting one, because there's already an FDA approved vaccine called Bexsero, which is a meningococcal B vaccine. And there has been a study that was done in Europe that actually showed that it might also give you some protection against gonorrhea, because the bacteria, the two bacteria are really closely related. So probably, again, not a 100% thing, but you know, I figure maybe between this vaccine and DoxyPep, we'll have a better chance at preventing gonorrhea transmission.
Inject it straight into my veins. Like, whatever vaccine you've got, give it to me. I'll take as much protection as I can.
I will take all the vaccines. Yeah, exactly. Vaccine me up.
Thank you so much for sharing with all of us the incredible knowledge you have in regards to protecting ourselves. Of course, it's a huge responsibility, not only just for our bottoms, but just for but also our tops, checking themselves regularly and using protective measures, like you say, like PrEP. Like DoxyPep. Another major benefit for people who have the, if your insurance covers the injectable PrEP, just like stigma of taking pills in public and letting people know, you know, it's just super nice to have that be an injection and no one sees you taking PrEP. One major question I've had in regards to cum dumps, you say that it takes a huge mental toll, it takes a huge physical toll. And after, you know, you've taken so many loads, your body's exhausted, you're super drained. What does aftercare look like for yourself after these exhausting sessions?
Oh, that's a good question. It's a little bit different after everyone, but I think the most important thing is that, you know, I just listen to my body and think about what I need. Sometimes I want to take a nice long hot bath. It's like a physical thing. I like throw a bunch of Epsom salt in the bathtub, soak in there for about 30 minutes. That's it sometimes. It always includes food. I'm always hungry after a cum dump. And I will eat that day. Like, I know some cum dumps don't eat leading up to their cum dump. I know my body well enough and like my digestive schedule that I can still eat and do a deep clean and be fine. But I'm still hungry, so I'm still going to eat. But it's usually like a hot bath, taking it easy the next day, not trying to do, you know, a ton of things. I've probably also inhaled a fair amount of poppers that day, so, you know, not trying to do anything, you know, super strenuous the next day. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's really just about like listening to your body and giving yourself the time and space that you need to recover from that, just like you would for a marathon. You know, like, keep going back to the marathon analogy, you know, the day after a marathon, you're probably not going to, I don't know, move out of your apartment or something, you know, just yeah. give yourself some time to recover.
Are there any challenges that you've had in your cum dump experiences that you sort of wish you knew about before getting into it?
I don't know if I've had that many challenges per se. I think one thing is, for me, I prefer to have a cum dump host now versus doing my own. I think for me, it has really allowed me to let go and enjoy the moment a little bit more, knowing that there's someone else in the room who is, you know, managing the messages, finding more tops, talking to the tops as they come in, you know, just kind of watching out for the things around the room, things like that. So I guess earlier on, I would say I wish I had known to bring a friend or have a cum dump host earlier, but also, you know, be vocal in your cum dumps. And I don't mean, you know, moan a lot, although I am a moaner, but if you see something that looks suspicious to you, don't ignore it. Right. Or if someone is doing something to you that you as the cum dump do not like, say something about it. Because yes, while I am there to be a community whole and to serve the tops that are coming in, I still have to be protective of my own boundaries. Like, for example, it wasn't at a full-on cum dump session, but I was ass up taking a couple of, you know, casual loads like you do.
Nice one.
And this top came in. Yeah, exactly. And this top came in and he just started like jamming his fingers, like knuckles deep into me, like really forcefully. And I was not into that. And so I gave him a warning and I said, hey, no fingers, please. Then we like switched positions and he started doing it again. And I said, hey, that doesn't feel good. Please stop. And his response to that was, no, it's okay. And he kept going. And I like literally got up, you know, pulled his fingers out of my hole, got up on my hands and knees and faced him and said, no, it's not okay. You need to leave. And he did, thankfully, without causing too much of a scene. But, you know, I think as a cum dump, you know, you need to be sure with what you're comfortable with. And you need to be somewhat aware of your surroundings because you are putting yourself at risk by inviting, you know, a ton of strangers into your motel room or into your apartment or wherever else that you're doing your cum dump. So that's why I think having a cum dump host is actually a really great benefit if you can find a top or a friend who's willing to be the host. And I know that some guys really get off on that. So if you're a top out there and you want to get into hosting cum dumps, you know, cum dumps everywhere will thank you. And the other breeder tops in the area will also thank you. This one cum dump host in Atlanta, I was just there a couple of weeks ago. He's amazing. He was like my personal dick concierge all week because he knew he hosts so many cum dumps there and he knows all the tops. And I got into the hotel, you know, the night that I flew in and I said, hey, I want to find some hot tops to like DP in my hotel room. And he was like, yep, I got you. And he like reached out to a few tops, showed up like an hour or two later, and we had a great time. So, and he was able to do that because he was a cum dump host and he knows all the regular breeders in that area. And I was like, oh my gosh, you need to like offer this as a service to bottoms that come into Atlanta and you can be their like personal dick concierge.
I was about to say, what an amazing service. Like that is so convenient. High quality chops just on demand via like a concierge service. Incredible.
Right. He just needs an app and then we could just order them online.
Right. So how do you balance your kink life with your home life? How do they intersect? How do you keep them separate? How do you manage your responsibilities? How does that work?
That's a great question. So I try to actually keep my kink life separate from my personal life for a number of reasons I won't really share because they're private. But my, you know, my Twitter makes it look like I'm getting bread, you know, 10 times a week. And to be honest, sometimes I am, but you know, that is social media. There's always like a spin on what you see online, right? And so I hate to break it to a lot of my followers, but I'm probably a little more normal than you might think. I'm just like a normal person. I have a full-time job. I have a husband. I've got, you know, my friends and my family. I have a, you know, a couple of hobbies. Yes, I'm locked 24/7 and I go to work and I do all those hobbies while locked, but most of the time I'm just kind of going about my normal life. You know, I'm I go to Costco just like everyone else. So for me, you know, it's really about finding the balance in my life. I love getting bread and I love doing that as much as I can, but I'm really realistic with what I can commit to. I probably, you know, won't ever have more than one or maybe two cum dumps a month. I have a Just for Fans, but you know, I've got a couple of trusty followers there, but I'm probably never going to be, you know, like the top 1% on Just for Fans or have a million followers or ever make my full-time living off of Just for Fans. That's all really just for fun. So for me, I'm, you know, just trying to have fun with all of this while, you know, still pursuing the other things in life that I think are important. That said, when it is playtime and when Maxon is out there, yeah, I'm all in.
We as gay men have incredibly complex and multifaceted layers to ourselves. And you can be all those many things and still be an incredibly slutty, amazing cum dump, you know? And it sounds like you've worked out a system where you found balance in being regular guy and also Max Encaged. Do you have any exciting events that are coming up for you?
Oh gosh, that's a good one. I'm not, like when I travel, I don't often get to do those like fun Atlantis cruises or anything like that. I haven't done a lot of, I've actually never been on an Atlantis cruise. It does look like a lot of fun, although I might never leave the cabin. But there are a ton of fun and exciting things in San Francisco. And this is one of the best things about living in San Francisco. You know, we've got the Dory Alley Fair or Up Your Alley at the end of July. We've got Pride. We've got Folsom Street Fair, of course, at the end of September. You know, we've got an amazing store here, Mr. S Leather, that also has their own parties. There's fisting parties here. There's all sorts of like kink parties and play parties going on. So I don't know. I don't think I have to like travel that much to experience it because so much is happening here in San Francisco. So no, I don't have any big events that I'm going to. Like, I'm not going to Darklands or, you know, MAL or whatever all those fun events are, but I like to play when I'm here in San Francisco. I'll probably plan some cum dumps around some of those events. So if you're in San Francisco for Dory or for Folsom, you know, send me a message.
That's hilarious. Master and I actually are going to be coming for Dory. So maybe I'll hang out with you soon. That's super exciting.
Oh my gosh. Let's totally do it. I love Dory. Honestly, Dory is, you know, it's a lot smaller than Folsom Street Fair, but it's like concentrated, you know.
I hear people are more intentional about the kink versus Folsom is just general in all ways.
Yeah, I think Folsom draws a lot of, you know, gawkers and people who are like, ooh, let's go check out the leather fair. Oh my gosh, did you see that guy? What he was doing on the street? And at Dory, it's like all the actual, you know, enthusiasts and players that are here for fun.
Yeah, Dory. I've been to Dory 3 times and I love it. I might make it there this year. Haven't figured that out yet, but I would love to. We know you're an avid listener of the pod, but do you have any questions for us, the hosts?
Yes, I do. I want to know how Chastity Pod has changed your lives. I feel like you have changed so many lives of your listeners. You've certainly changed mine. But like, you know, like did when you set out to create this podcast, you know, did you think that you would have the impact that it has had? And I hope that people are writing back to you and telling you, you know, their stories and how you've helped, because like, I want Chastity Pod to just keep on going. I want to see like the 20th season of Chastity Pod.
Lockfist, why don't you take this one to start?
Oh man, if we're doing this for the next 17 years, Jesus, we might actually eventually run out of stuff to say.
No, what if we like have some other people that like take it from us and it evolves with them? It'll be like passing on.
That would be cool. Passing on the baton. Yeah, we actually probably should do that after like, I don't know, not this season, not next season. No, but like, I'm not saying now, but I am saying at some future point, we should probably do that. For me, it hasn't made a huge impact on my life in the sense that like my sexuality was already pretty strongly formed when we started making this podcast. Like I had already gotten a Prince Albert. I had already gotten my huge nipple rings. I had already gotten double fisted. Like I had already experienced most of the stuff that I greatly enjoy when we started making the podcast. One of the cool highlights though has been especially as it's gotten more attention, is occasionally people recognizing me and being like, oh my God, I love your podcast. And I'm like, amazing. Please stick your fists in me. So like that, just last week on like Grindr, I was hitting up this 18-year-old and like, you know, we had gotten to the point where we shared pics and he's like, oh my God, you're the host of Chastity Pod. I love your podcast. And I was like, amazing. So yeah, the love and support that we're getting from everyone, that part has easily been the best and most fantastic part of this. And I think one thing I'd like us to do, or one thing Dan Dumbly and I have talked about doing, is it'd be nice to host some Chastity socials. I know that that started happening in New York already. I should really get on the ball and starting to organize one in Chicago. I know actually jack shit about event planning. So maybe after this, I should bother you, Max, and like find out what are the steps that goes into actually planning like a kink social.
And is it like a cum dump?
Is it like a cum dump? I could make it also a cum dump. I could find a bottom to be the Chastity social and cum dump. But I feel like
there's too many bottoms there. Oh my God.
Exactly. That wouldn't work. Right. Yeah. So what about you, Denied Dumpling? What impact has doing the show had on your sex life, on you?
I mean, being noticed in public is, again, one of the biggest things. I think it was during pandemic, I was wearing a mask covering my face, and I'm walking across the street, and this guy makes eye contact with me, keeps it as we're crossing each other on the crosswalk, and then stops and goes, "Are you the podcast host?" And I was like, huh? And I turn around. He's like, you run that podcast, right? You know what I'm talking about. And I like look at him. And I take off my mask and I wink and I leave.
And it's 100%.
No, it's just 100%. He just saw like, I guess like I also had blonde hair back then. And I guess I also showed face on Twitter. But he hit me up on Recon later and was like, it is you. It is you. Anyways, he was a visitor. I think the most amazing thing that has happened with this podcast is definitely the feedback we get from people who've finished season one, and they tell us about how we've kind of, you know, led them into a kink that they would otherwise have no real entryway into. And it's like, I love the fact that this is a podcast. Anyone could get into it, yourself included. And season one was also always like the basics. I think season two, we really caught our stride and we started like talking about different exciting things that we're seeing. And I think that as we expose people to the possibilities, the endless possibilities of kink and the intersections with chastity, that's when we're really going to find like the most exciting, most next level future of what kink can be. Mm. So that's really rewarding, the feedback that we get.
That's so cool. I do feel like finding your community in anything, whether it's, you know, chastity or another kink or another hobby or whatever it is, like, you know, you don't have to do anything yourself. And I think for me, and you know, becoming Maxon and starting, you know, my Twitter and everything, like finding the community, like finding Chastity
Pod, oh, heck yeah,
and chatting with other folks on Twitter and, you know, Telegram and, you know, WhatsApp and all these other places, like, you know, really gave me inspiration and encouraged me to, you know, pursue chastity and to go as deep as I have, because I don't think I would have been able to do any of this if it were just me, you know, wearing a cage all by myself in my bedroom, you know.
Representation and validation is so important in kink.
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Maxon, thank you so much for coming on the show. We loved having you. I look forward to reading the Cum Dump Bible when it gets written. If people want to find you online, where should they go?
The fastest and most direct way is my Twitter account at MaxonCaged, MaxonCaged. And I have a, you know, link thing up there in my Twitter bio where you can find my Just for Fans and other things as well.
Thank you so much. That's our show. Maxon, as our guest, why don't you close us out?
I'm so excited. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. And until next time, stay locked.
Woo! And that's our show.
Crushed it.
Your dick shouldn't be unprotected. It belongs in a cage. Are you happier locked up and denied? Doesn't it feel so good though? podcast.